We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call. Mayor Pruitt?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Kelly? Councilmember Michelson? Councilmember Cavallari? Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Michelson told us she would...
She did contact me, and she is was unavoidably detained due to a medical emergency.
Okay, and Councilmember Kelly contacted Councilmember Cavallari and said he had a medical procedure and is unable to be here tonight. So may we have a motion to excuse the two of them?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Next up is audience communication. Will, did you want to say something?
Yes. I was out and about this weekend, and I noticed that your motorcycle cop was out and about, too, and he was all rather bundled up, and I just kind of wondered if the guy was cold.
He loves what he does.
Okay. On a more serious note, I see next week, 2 weeks from now, you're going to entertain a potential increase in taxes. The reason I'm speaking about it now is I noticed in the presentation that Rebecca will give later on proposed countywide planning policies, or CPP, whatever that is. The city received $1 million in park mitigation funds a few years ago, and I didn't really know about that. I thought that was interesting. And I think back to the money the city spent on the park south of town outside the city limits. And I think of all the money we spent on the annex and the purchase of the Remnard, Cook, and Dobson properties. And, of course, we're getting some use out of the annex and maybe get some use out of the Cook. And then the library switcheroo, as Bart Masterson calls it. I realized that part of that money that went into the Remlard Dobson properties was from ongoing taxes collected as part of the library switcheroo. And for those in the audience who don't know what that is, several years ago the city enticed the taxpayers to pick up the public library funding, and they kept the rest of the money for themselves. So in my mind, you have cash in the bank in the Remlard and Dobson property. I would suggest instead of raising taxes next week, you rezone the Remlard and Dobson properties to single-family residential and sell them and use that money for paving and to take care of tax increases. It is cash. It is taxpayer money. And I think that would be appropriate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else want to talk to the council tonight? Going once, twice? Okay. First up is the Snohomish County Health District update, and we have Jeff Ketchell. I've only talked to you three times in the last 3 days.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Council, Mayor, staff, very happy to be back here again. I did have a few handouts for the council that I put on the table there. And I'll just sort of jump into the presentation. Did you have the clicker, Mark? Oh, am I supposed to go up there? I'm sorry.
Just came here from a Board of Health meeting, so
First of all, I'm going to apologize for a mistake that I made. I do a lot of these city council meetings, and last night, Dr. Beatty and I were in Index. But what you see here are pictures of Granite Falls, not of Mill Creek.
Thank you
so
much.
We do have pictures of Mill Creek, I promise you, but these are the – so for those who caught that and say, what's Jeff and Dr. Beatty doing – we're just moving faster than sometimes our brains can keep up with. So I did get the date right, though. So at the Snohomish Health District, when I came here to present to the City Council earlier this summer, we focused on a message of making life simpler, safer, and healthier. And we want to continue on those messages. And I really want to highlight the simpler part. We're about to launch. We have already soft launched, and we're going to have a press release probably next week our new Envision Connect online system. And that new system will allow people to, from the comfort of their homes, from their own internet connection, buy permits, renew their permits, submit applications, monitor the progress of their applications, submit complaints, get birth or death certificates, and basically conduct all kinds of business with the Sonoma South District virtually, and then be able to submit them online. If they want, like, the birth certificate then mailed to them, they can mail it, or they can come pick it up later if they so choose. And so finally, the Sonoma South District is moving into the 21st century. We've had a number of IT problems over the past few years, and so it's nice to be, we'll be able to launch that, and you'll see more of that as it becomes more available. So this has been a year of transition for the Sonoma South District. So we have officially received an offer for the Rucker Building, which is the building in Everett that houses the Sonoma South District. There's a purchase and sale agreement and due diligence going on right now with the city of Everett. And we have in turn made an offer on a pair of buildings in Everett. And we'll see how that goes. But it looks like we may be changing addresses here sometime in the next year or so. There's also been a number of leadership changes. Dr. Goldbaum, before us, was the administrator and the health officer for the Sonoma South District. The Board of Health split those jobs into two. I am the new administrator, just permanent as of November 1st. And Dr. Beatty is our new health officer, and he's been here just about 6 weeks. When we came before the city of Mill Creek last fall and asked for a per capita contribution to the health district, we highlighted the opioid epidemic as a place of focus for 2017. And at that time, we were really focusing on three areas: supporting the syringe exchange, passing the new medicine return ordinance, and our WIC and First Steps activities working with at-risk families. And at that time, we really talked about some of the things we wanted to get done in 2017. And I'm here to update and let you know that we've had a lot of traction in these areas. Under prevention, you see the term social marketing. We helped to host a number of heroin forums last year throughout Snohomish County. And one of the consistent messages we received was there was no one-stop shopping for opioid information, whether prevention, treatment, education, communication, things like that. And so the Snohomish Health District set up SnohomishOverdosePrevention.com as a one-stop shop for all of Snohomish County to receive information and to get updates. And there's the full complement of social media pieces to that as well. And we're very happy to have launched that. On the response, the third one down, you see needle cleanup. You may have seen on TV news and media and print media over the past couple of months, moms and coaches having to go out to play fields and playgrounds to clean up syringes so their kids can play or practice. And the city of Everett came to us and said, this is a deep concern of ours. Is there anything we can do about it? And so the health district, with money we received from the cities, we put together 1,000 of these needle cleanup kits, which we've distributed about half of them so far. And what these needle cleanup kits are is a needle box, some tongs, some heavy-duty gloves, safety glasses, alcohol sanitizer, and instruction card. And with the city of Everett, we made an instructional video about how to safely go up and pick syringes. Is that something you want to do? And then community groups that want to go out and do a big cleanup, we have bigger boxes, needle containers available to them. And then when they're done, one of the best parts is they can bring that full container back to us and we'll dispose of it. You may have seen in the Everett Herald in the past couple weeks, there was a giant cleanup of a transient camp by Home Depot in South Everett. Well, that big pile of syringes you saw on the tarp there, we took care of those. So just been one of our success stories. And on a long-term note, in King and Pierce counties, you can put syringes in pop bottles and milk jugs, take them up, tape them up, and throw them in the trash. But you can't do that here in Snohomish County. And we've beginning conversations with Snohomish County and changing county code and the Board of Health code to be a little bit more lenient for how we dispose of syringes in Snohomish County. We don't feel it's a risk to sanitation workers or others, and we feel that their syringes are already being thrown in the trash anyway. We might as well do it as safely as possible. Another thing we're working on is data evaluation. And one of the handouts you have in front of you has to do with our 7-day count that we did last July for overdoses throughout Snohomish County. And so one problems we have with data is sometimes data takes a while to get to us, and it's not always in real time. This was a partnership with the law enforcement, EMS, the syringe exchange, hospitals, and others to track for a 1-week period of time all the overdoses that happened throughout Snohomish County. There were, I believe, 37 overdoses and 3 deaths. And this was really served as a wake-up call for all of Snohomish County about sort of the magnitude of the problem. Now, is this enough to measure the whole problem? Not even close. But it really incentivized us and motivated us to try to find new sources of data to be able to describe the problem in real time. So as we look forward to 2018, we're looking at continuing to expand our opioid response. We're working in partnership with the Sheriff's Office and County Human Services and the County Executive's Office, but we continue to have some of our public health initiatives. One of them has to do with safe storage, the last one under prevention there. And at community events throughout the county, we've been providing these lock bags, which are very similar to a banker's bag. And what we're encouraging people to do is if you're prescribed opioid painkillers and you have to bring them back to your house, that you lock them up, just like you may want to lock up your gun and put a gun lock on a gun. They can be just as dangerous for your teenagers or others, people who may, you know, steal a couple of how do you know if somebody's taking a couple Vicodin out of your pill bottles? Now, if somebody really wanted to break into this, they could. It does have a combination and a key lock, but you'll know it. And we really encourage people to lock these up. And if there's anybody here who would like this one, they can have it. We'll leave that here. Another thing we're working on under response there is exposure response. And a couple months ago in Arlington, there were a couple of police officers exposed to an unknown opioid during a drug bust in a motel. And this back in the 90s, the health district used to respond to meth lab busts. And we would make sure that the meth labs were properly tested and decontaminated in hotels or other public spaces before they were allowed reentry. And so if we're expecting something like this to happen again, especially with the advent of some of the synthetic opioids that are a little bit more dangerous and fatal to when you come in contact with them. And so we now have a standard operating procedure we're putting into place for when something like this happens, and we can cooperate with and support law enforcement to keep them safe. And also to keep the public safe if there's one of these things in a motel room or a public restroom or other public space. Moving on away from opioids, there has been a lot of discussion over the past couple of years about should the health district merge with Snohomish County. And the county hired former County Councilman Dave Gossett to conduct a merger analysis. And while his analysis did not have a specific recommendation, he did outline a number of reasons why it behooved us to remain independent, remain a health district. And some of those included things like bureaucracy, speed of being able to do business. This needle cleanup kit project went from idea to launch in 3 weeks. I've worked in government for 23 years and nothing happens in 3 weeks. So the health district remains a very nimble, responsive agency, and we like to keep it that way. Public health focus. By staying independent, we're able to maintain our public health focus. Politicization. We regulate a number of the things that the county does, like solid waste facilities, and so this keeps us as an independent, objective third party. Competition for funding. I like the fact that the Snohomish Health District is responsible for its own financial future, and we don't have to compete with other county departments for funding. And lastly, the cost of providing services. There's significant cost differences between county employees and health district employees, and if all the health district employees became county employees, it would be about $600,000 more in costs, according to Mr. Gossett's report. We've also been focused on modernizing the health district. A year or so ago, we had the Ruckelhaus Center assessment that gave us a number of recommendations to improve our governance. One of those recommendations had to do with how our Board of Health conducted meetings and be able to get more business done. We've since instituted a number of committees that most of the Board of Health business gets done now, and our Board of Health meetings are a lot more effective and often don't need the full 2 hours every month. We've done a lot of innovation around IT. For example, our financial software. Our current financial software is from 1997. You can't even use a mouse, and it looks like MS-DOS. And we've since purchased this, and we'll be launching it this next spring, and we're very excited about that. We're also pursuing public health accreditation. There's a national accreditation for public health agencies. We expect to get that completed sometime in 2019. And one other thing in Mr. Goss's report is he stated that the health district needed some mission clarity. And that mission clarity we've identified as we're calling chief health strategist. I'm going to go sort of briefly into what it means to be chief health strategist. First of all, we have to be nimble, be able to adopt and adapt to strategies no matter what's going on in the community. So when you think of Snohomish Health District, You think of like restaurant inspections, vaccines, you know, things like that. But in reality, we have to be able to respond to no matter what is making people ill, injured, or prematurely dead. And in this case, you have things like opioids in Snohomish County. Snohomish County is experiencing a spike in youth suicide. And so how is public health responding to this? How is public health preventing these things from happening? And we have to be able, no matter what our funding streams are, no matter what our normal contractual work is, we have to be able to adapt and move quickly. Number two, we have to be able to identify and analyze big data. So there's a lot more data sources out there available right now. How are we accessing them and using them to describe the health of our population in real time? And that's a big move that we're making. Thirdly, collaborate with a bunch of broad array of allies. So I used to work for the Grant County Health District. I was the administrator out there for over 5 years. And working there, I worked very closely with the cities. And the cities, nearly every city provided funding to the health district. And I had a close relationship. We worked collaboratively on policies. We worked on different initiatives. We had regular communications. I went out and visited city councils, much like I'm here tonight. And so when I moved here to Snohomish County about 2.5 years ago, I was very disappointed that the Snohomish Health District and the cities did not have that close of a relationship. And so that is something that I want to bridge and bring closer together. And the fact that my second visit here this year, I look forward to returning next year one or more times to continue that communication and be available to the staff here and to whatever the priorities are for Mill Creek. And then lastly, it's about just state-of-the-art business practices. So this Envision Connect online launch that we're in the midst of, that's just one example of the modernization of our system and becoming our chief health strategist. Another question that we've gotten is about funding, financial sustainability of the health district. So we don't have taxing authority. Most of our funding is unreliable. And so are there ways we can be a little bit more sustainable? So whenever you take over an agency or take over something, you always start peeling back the onion and saying, okay, what's going on here? And as I've been peeling back the onion the past 7 months, one of the things I found was we weren't maximizing all of our grants and contracts as best as we could have. And whenever you get a grant or a contract, there's a reasonable expectation that you're going to maximize that funding and do the services that are provided. And so we're doing a better job, and with the new financial software coming aboard, we'll be able to oversee and monitor that much better. Another thing is on fund balance. We maintain a larger than normal fund balance, and that's because we don't have the reliable tax funding that cities and other political entities have. But in we're talking with Mr. Gossett in his report, is there a way we can sort of ease bad years and good years so that we don't have to cut programs and services and staff when we have a bad year, and then when we have a good year and we have the grants and other finances coming in, we can retool that fund balance. Tonight, our Board of Health passed a new fee schedule. For the past 12 months, we did a 12-month a time study of all of our environmental health staff, and we now just passed a fee schedule that is reflective of the actual cost of doing business. And in that study, some of our fees went up, of course. Some stayed the same, but some went down. Because it's taken us less time to do that body of work. We also had some success with the legislature this year. There was a giant initiative called Public Health is Essential, where we were asking the legislature to fund the very basic public health services as they've mandated us in state law. And we asked for $60 million. They gave us $12 million, but what that means for the Snohomish Health District is $437,000 a year for the next 2 years to work on communicable disease and sexually transmitted disease. And lastly, value and partnership. We really want to have strong partnerships with our cities. We want you to see value in what we do. We want us to be relevant to your work. And we very much appreciate partnering with Mill Creek on funding. So thank you very much. I also want to give some time here to Dr. Beatty to come on up here and introduce himself and talk about some of the work that he's been engaging in.
I just wanted to give to introduce myself and let you know my background. So you may know Jeff. He's been here for a while, but I've only been living in the state for 6 weeks. So I've been boarded in pediatrics and preventive medicine, and I have an MPH from Johns Hopkins. Directly out of training, I went to work for the Public Health Service, where I served for 8 years. The first 2 years of that was with the Indian Health Service on the Navajo lands in New Mexico in a remote hospital, 150 miles from the closest next hospital. We had a 24-hour ER that accepted all patients. And from there, I went to work for the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. I was there during the anthrax letters. I was part of the field investigation that helped figure out, you know, what the cause of that outbreak was. But also, I helped work with FDA on how to control and prevent anthrax where there's contamination in food or water. From there, I went to the New York City. I was stationed in the New York City Health Department, worked on preparedness, tuberculosis, and HIV. And then I took a position in Puerto Rico for 2 years working on mosquito-borne diseases like dengue fever and Zika, as you've probably heard of. I wanted to do more international work, and so I took a position. I left CDC, and I took a position in South Korea at the International Vaccine Institute, which worked on developing vaccines and implementing them in underserved countries. So I spent a lot of time in India, Africa, Southeast Asia, and South America. So it's hardly in Korea, actually, most of the time. And then we lost our funding from the Gates Foundation, and I decided to return to the U.S. and work and get some experience in the pharmaceutical industry. So I joined Novartis Vaccines and worked in the industry for about 5 years doing phase 2 through 4 clinical trials. Maybe you've heard of Fluad, which is an influenza vaccine that's recommended for the elderly. It was my trial that got that approved in the U.S. But I got disappointed with industry, and I went back to work for the CDC. They posted me in Saudi Arabia, of all places, to train physicians at the Ministry of Health there to do epidemiology and outbreak investigations, and I did that for a while until we had our second baby and decided it might not be the best place for the baby, so we came back to the U.S. I did my PEDS training in Oregon, and so I was happy to come back to the Northwest, and I'm happy to now use all the experience that I have to share and be on the front line of public health. So thank you for letting me talk.
Are we going to be boring compared to everything else you said?
I'm tired. Any questions?
Mark, do you have anything to add?
No, but it's other than it's just been a real joy to be a part of the health board. Thank you, council, for giving me the chance to serve as our member representative on the health board, and working with Jeff and our doctors been really good. They're great people. They're passionate about the community, and they're serving the folks that of Snohomish County very well.
Thank you very much for coming.
Please feel free if there's ever questions about public health or medicine. The door's open.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Jeff, can I have that back? The Sultan code enforcement gal was just asking for a cleanup kit. Is it extra?
Perfect.
Thank you.
Did you finally get more of those made? Because I know you ran out. I read that you were surprised.
Feel free, come by. If you want your information about where you're going to go clean up and get contact.
I was out in Sultan, and their code enforcement was asking about how do I clean up these needles that I'm coming across, and this is a perfect gift bag for tomorrow. When I go back to work out in Sultan, I'll drop that off.
Thank you. Rebecca, you're up next.
Thank you. I am actually going to turn the presentation over to Joni and Brian, but before they get underway, they're going to provide the council with an update on the Veterans Day activities this weekend. But I just really want to compliment their work and their management. You know, we started this now 3 years ago. One, to engage the community, and the program continues to be designed to do that. And I have been so pleased with the number of comments I've received from members of the community or visitors to the community that just says this feels like a nice hometown. And so I think these events are helping with that. But these events are also part of our strategic plan to promote tourism within Mill Creek. And so I think as Brian goes through what's been going on for this year's Veterans Day planning, you'll see that they've made great strides towards the goal of making this the largest event north of Auburn and making it a regional event. And our civic engagement really took an exponential leap this year with our Veterans Advisory Group. And I believe we have some of those folks here tonight as well. They have been meeting on a regular basis and helping the city grow and expand the event. And so we're very appreciative for their involvement and their hours of volunteer work on behalf of the community. And so with that, I just want to turn it over to Brian.
Yeah.
All right.
We're ready to roll.
All right.
Get all these papers in order here. All right.
And props.
And props. I apologize for the health district. I pushed back the podium to take a photo earlier and had him teetering on a step. So he looked like a giant, you know. It was my fault for having him stand on a step. All right. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity, Council, to present to you this evening on Veterans Day events. First off, I'd like to do a list of thank yous to our police department, public works department, communication and marketing. If you guys have been following our social media, it's been out for the last month and a half, 2 months, 3 months. It's been great. Executive department, planning department, finance, pretty much every department here at the city has been involved in some way, and you will see them on Saturday at the parade and the ceremony. We also have Mill Creek Town Center Business Association, who's been a big supporter, Mill Creek Business Association, our youth advisory board. We'll have 20 volunteers out there on Saturday, and they've been making some bracelets, what we'll get to here in a little bit. Mill Creek Kiwanis Club, which is coming online, has been huge. Rotary has given some funds and is also volunteering. Lions Club, our citizens group, which we have some members here in the audience. So Barbara Heidel right there. Will is a veteran, so I'll recognize him, and he's been on the communication. Cameron and Shannon Olson in the back row. Let's see, we got Dan here in the front, Dan Lindberg, master of ceremonies for the two events, and then Fred Hilbrick right here in the front as well. So that makes up a good amount of our group, and then Fire District 7 has been great as well, coordinating with some of the different groups and getting us back the pipes and drums, which is awesome. And then quick shout out to our news media, Rich with the News of Mill Creek Online, Fred with Mill Creek View, and then Dan with the Beacon. The support has been really good. So here's the citizens group. We've started meeting in August, and they're advising city staff on what they would like to see out of the event, some stuff we've done in the past, new stuff for the future. So it's been a great group of people. And here's all the members of that group here in our community. As you'll see, you also given the program, the citizens group, the program right here. The citizen group would like to start a local AMVETS chapter here in Mill Creek. So that AMVETS is for active and retired military. And so there's information in there about them starting a post. They already tonight secured 10 members to start their charter. They're hoping to get 30 to 40 members in the community and meet here at City Hall for their meetings. As part of the program, we also, let's see here, as part of the citizens, we also started this vet walk this year. So we have 7 locations throughout Town Center and south of Mill Creek here at Evergreen Auto Works, where John Raymer, one of our new veteran citizen committee, he just moved to town, lives in Woodside Walk, and he has 14 mannequins. The slide's already wrong because it just keeps on adding every minute. 14 mannequins provided by University Bookstore up and down the street, Main Street, in the windows, kind of letting people know Veterans Day is coming. Let's celebrate. He's got a huge collection of uniforms. Shannon and Cameron Olson also donated to the uniform here in City Hall. So I appreciate that. As part, we did Operation Gratitude, big push this year for Operation Gratitude. These are letters by first graders at Mill Creek Elementary School. We had donation bins at City Hall, North and South, Heatherwood Middle School, Mill Creek, Silver Firs, and Jackson. There's some of the supplies we collected right there. And then these bracelets, our youth advisory board has taken 550 paracord, weaved it into bracelets that are, each bracelet 7.5 feet long. It can be used for survival for first responders and military. So we have over 500 bracelets that we're gonna donate as well. I brought some samples if you wanted to see. One short.
We could both look at each side.
This is through Operation Gratitude, so they provide the video online, and then our team made them. So,
red or gray.
So that's been a really good program for Youth Advisory Board. They're looking to go to WE Day later this year, and they needed a national fundraiser or national donation drive, so making these bracelets and giving them Operation Gratitude solidifies that national donation. So as you can kind of see, we're following along on the program here. We have the commemorative ceremony, which we've done for the past 3 years. This year we have added, we'll just run it down, why not? So we have our Master of Ceremonies, Dan Lindbergh, going to kick things off. He'll introduce the mayor, Ms. Pam Pruitt. And then after welcoming remarks, we'll have Congresswoman Susan DelBene have some Veterans Day remarks. Then we'll have two letters read by aides of Senator Patty Murray and Senator Maria Cantwell. We have prayer with Snohomish County Fire District 7 chaplain this year. Presentation of the American flag by South Snohomish Police Honor Guard. Raising of the flag by Mill Creek Police Officer Veterans Sean Connor, Sergeant Sean Connor, and Scott LaRose. Mill Creek Corral will sing the national anthem. Laying of the wreath this year will be City Council Member and Veteran Vince Cavallari and local resident Veteran Paul Stern. Our bugler from Glacier Peak High School, Corbin Epp, who's been here the last 3 years, will play taps. And then Milk Corral will sing America the Beautiful to close it out. This year we worked with VFW of Edmonds to get 2,000 poppies to do a donation drive at the monument as well. If you remember Memorial Day, we had carnations that we laid on the monument. For Veterans Day, we'll do poppies, kind of keep the two events separate. Also tomorrow we have the sandblaster will be adding five names to the monument, and they'll be unveiled at the ceremony event. So the five new names. The parade, the highlight, the spectacle. The parade has doubled in size this year. We had 34 participating groups last year. We're at 64, could change tomorrow to 66, I'm not sure. So we'll have over 850 participants just in the parade alone. We'll have 75 vehicles, including this Abbott tank that is going to be joining us this year, and 12 horses from Seattle Mounted Patrol and Snohomish Sheriff County Posse drill team. In this picture, we have Jim Grimes, a World War II veteran, dressed as George Washington, riding the gun of the tank in the Kirkland Parade, is where this photo is from. What's really special about the parade this year is we have four World War II veterans joining us, and they will all be in the parade. They will mostly be at the commemorative ceremony as well. We'll recognize them at both locations, and they're coming with different groups, so it's really great to have them. They range in age from 97 to 99, and we'll all be there. So, see here. And then, so here they are. Here's all our World War II veterans, our Grand Marshal, Commander R.D. Burley, Naval Station Everett, Executive Officer. Same parade route. We'll be starting from LA Fitness down to City Hall North. The parade, like I said, we'll have 76 vehicles in it. We'll have parade marshals walking with the parade to try to keep the parade together. We'll have performances happening at 153rd, that's the La Palmera, and Main Street, and then at Starbucks in front of the Master of Ceremonies tent and the stage where you guys will be located, along with Dan and some of our veterans, our World War II veterans, and other dignitaries and people that will come to the parade. So that's where the sound system will be, is right there at Starbucks, and we'll have two parade participation performance areas on the parade route. So should be a lot of fun. We've tried to stagger it. We have seven color honor guards coming to the parade, so every eight groups down the parade route, we have another color honor guard, which will separate it out and make people hopefully realize they're at a Veterans Day event. And we've done that as well with the military vehicles that are in the parade. So we have some coming in the beginning, and then we see a gap, and then we have more and more and more. We have a lot more veterans in the parade this year than we've ever had, and a lot more participating groups. As you can see, there's the groups in the program. I didn't list them all up here on the PowerPoint because we would have had a ton of PowerPoints going on. So if there's any questions on people participating, please let me know. One thing that you'll see after the participating groups in the parade, we have this community song. As one outreach for the Veterans Day activities here in Mill Creek, myself and Joni went over to eight elementary schools, Heatherwood Middle School and Jackson High School, and kind of welcomed Joni to town through the schools and reached out to the schools and see what they needed from the city and what we could, you know, what they could help us with. Through that outreach, we have Youth Advisory Board going over to Mill Creek Elementary School and mentoring students. So that's one fallout of those meetings. Another great thing is we have Cedarwood Elementary. They invited the whole school to the parade. So all the students, all the parents, all the teachers. So we're anticipating about 100 students coming to the parade, and they wanted to sing a community song, Bless Our Troops. So we put it in the program here. They'll stop on main stage in front of the Master of Ceremonies tent. Everybody, we're providing the song to the spectators. We'll play the sound through the sound system, and we'll all sing a song together, Bless Our Troops, which we think is pretty cool. Yeah, and Mill Creek Kiwanis is bringing 150 high schoolers to the parade to walk in the parade. So 75 from Jackson High School, 75 from North Creek High School, the new one. So just a couple photos from previous years. We have Tony Bittinger on the motorcycle, Fire District 7. Dan made it on the slide. That's Master Ceremonies. A Girl Scouts poster we took a photo of. Pipes and drums are back, so we're super excited about that. We have the Jackson or Everett School District Color Guard, the Mounted Patrol are back. The Girl Scouts will be back in force. Glacier Peak Band will be in the back of the parade this year, so you should hear the music coming all the way down the parade route. The Lions Club, lots of military vehicles, and Cats Exotics is throwing in the American flag Lamborghini right there pictured. So yeah, that is all I have.
I just really want to commend Brian, first of all. I think it's hard to explain the number of logistics and details that go into putting together events, particularly when you're exponentially growing those events. And to remember that this time of year, we have Trunk or Treat, we have Veterans Day, and we have the Santa Parade and the tree lighting. And that is a lot of logistics and event planning at one time. You know, this is part of the best part of being a city, is events that bring community together like this. And I really want to commend Joni and Brian for really taking the management of the event to the next level through their creating event planner guides, reaching out to form the Citizens Advisory Group, getting more groups in the community engaged, broadening the net in terms of making it a regional event, a communications and marketing plan. This really is taking this event to the next level, and it speaks well to them, and it speaks well for our community that we've made this a priority. So now let's all go home and cross fingers for not too much rain on Saturday.
Yeah, we're excited for the outcome. We have two professional photographers come in. We're hoping to get a drone in the air, taking video of the whole production, weather dependent. So the outcome should be great. The participants are all super happy to be in the parade. Nothing but kind compliments. Everybody's happy they don't have to drive to Auburn, that there's a home here in the north end of Seattle where they can drive their military vehicles. A lot of them don't have heaters, so you can imagine that drive to Auburn.
Where are you going to line everybody up?
That's a great question. It's going to be just... We actually put you in charge of that. I left that out, but it's going to be organized chaos. We have planning staff, Tom and Sherry, helping us at the parade start area. We'll also have Kristen from Recreation, myself, a lot of volunteers. We just let the Woodside Walk people know we'd be taking away some of their parking on Saturday because we're going to extend up. The road closure between 151st and now 148th will happen at 10 o'clock, so we can have an hour before the parade to bring people onto the street and line them up. Some of the vehicles are huge. We have a Swift bus from Community Transit, two dump trucks from Pacific Topsoils, a couple senior retirement home buses, three fire truck car things going on, multiple trailers, pickups. We're way over. We're probably triple in vehicles than last year, so it'll be fun. I just leave Tom in charge, and then I go get caught. No, I'm just kidding. the whole community's coming together. Starbucks will be providing coffee for the participants, and Top Pot and Frost will be providing donuts, and Fred Meyer provided candy, so we're set.
It does take every person on the city staff to help pull it off, so thanks to the team of the city. If you have not RSVP'd to Gina, please do so we can logistically get things lined up. And again, just can't say enough good things about the hours and months of work that went into this.
Next up is the consent agenda. We have City Council meeting minutes of October 3rd, 2017, and City Council meeting minutes of October 10th, 2017. Do you have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. We're now down to reports. Had our first meeting of the transition board for the consolidated dispatch centers. It's a lot of work to do. I can just say that it was really helpful to know that the council was behind all this in order to speak with a louder voice, a stronger voice, to have good changes made, not in the procedures and policies, but in the more the financial and how things are done. So that was important. Anyway, that'll do it. Mark?
No report. I wasn't there, actually.
Oh, you weren't there? Nope. You didn't make it.
He never showed up.
Something happened.
And
sorry about that.
Everybody asked.
Well, thanks for the concern. I apologize. I was going to be there, and something came up. I did go to the AWC regional meeting with the city manager. It was a good meeting. They are talking mostly about what's going to go on in this upcoming legislative session, which is a 60-day session. Not a lot of new things on their legislative priority list this year necessarily, but that is, it's going to be kind of a continuation of some of the things we've been working on before. And I think city manager's got plans for AWC to come and talk to us, kind of more local concerns, so I won't get ahead of that. But take a look at that at, if you get a chance to look at their ledge agenda. One of our speakers tonight talked about taxes, and I heard what you said. That's great. Something I've talked briefly with the city manager, and I'm going to make it more public here. I'd like to have her make sure she helps us understand when we're talking about taxes next week, that our annual tax authorization vote. We got a report a little while ago from Peggy about our financial situation, and it looked good because we have a lot of good things happening. The economy is strong, and lots of the development activity and redevelopment activity in the city. But a lot of that is one-time revenues versus ongoing things. And so I would love it if, I know Peggy had just, the report was kind of hot off the press, but one of the things we kind of talked about during that evening, and I'd love to have some more information for next week, is kind of separate out what's one-time things that came as a result of some good economic activity, but think versus things that are ongoing, because I think we need to really balance what's our ongoing revenue stream versus the one-time stuff. We have yet to kind of develop a full capital plan, but we have a need to figure out ways to fund long-term things, one-time things with one-time revenue. So we should make sure we're looking at that. As we all know, we all hate tax increases. I'm among everybody else who hates tax increases, but we are all faced with inevitable tax increase or revenue increase, expense increases. Medical costs go up, retirement benefits have gone up, the contract requirements have gone up in terms of salary for our folks, and we're a service-oriented business that depends a lot on people. So 1% tax increase and 2 or 3% on contracts, that just doesn't work necessarily. So we're gonna have to look at all those things, and I'm sure we're gonna get some good information next week. Different one. I had a short discussion, and this is not necessarily Mill Creek oriented, but I would highlight everybody take a look at Snohomish Conservation District has asked for essentially a tax increase. They want to go from $5 a parcel that all of our citizens pay to $10 a parcel, and that is something the county council gets to decide on. And I'd encourage people to at least think about that, decide what the Snohomish Conservation District does for us, both in the urban areas and the rural areas throughout our county, and figure out if somebody deserves 100% tax increase. This is worthy of discussion, I believe. And I think that that's something our county council should be aware of. So that's my own personal pitch. Thanks.
City manager.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. It's my pleasure tonight sitting directly, well, no, to my right behind me is Gina Hortolosa, who has joined the city's team, leadership team, as the new director of Public Works and Development Services. She started with the city on last week, November 1st, and is already making an impact. Gina has a bachelor's degree in civil engineering. She's a licensed professional engineer. She's also a certified project management professional, and I think that experience is really going to be an asset to the leadership team as we really get into the capital improvement planning. She is a co-instructor of project management in King County, and she has a lot of experience in both the public and private sector, most recently coming from Snohomish County, but also with City of Kirkland. And, you know, how many times have we talked about City of Kirkland? Well, Gina was the engineer with the City of Kirkland for about 10 years, I believe, did a lot of their road projects, and so we've already been talking about that. She's also been in the private sector and worked in San Jose, California, and Bellevue, Washington. At Snohomish County, she was the program planning manager for the Transportation Improvement Program. And so in that role, she developed project management engineering functions, participated in regional transportation issue management, provided technical assistance to outside agencies, and most notably, really was very aggressive and very successful in securing a lot of outside funding. She is our first director of this newly combined department, which is a great opportunity for her to create a blueprint and for Mill Creek to lead the way in a new way of providing this service. In her interview, it was impressive to me that she shared the philosophy that we have in our culture here. She's very lean focused, dedicated to excellence, and focuses a lot on her staff development. And she didn't just say those words, but she was able to give me examples of how she had done that. And one of the things we like is people who really live and breathe lean every day. And one of the things I enjoyed is the other Gina was helping her get established. And we typically ask people coming on board, what kinds of office supplies and things do you need to get your office set up? And she wanted this painter's tape for the wall, and it was for lean. And she puts her stickies on there. And so it's a visual for her staff every day to see how things are going. And so I like that a lot. I think she will serve as a great regional and state leader for Mill Creek. She's been published in PM Magazine, which, if you're not familiar, is the publication for the ICMA. And last Friday, she presented at the American Water Works Association Young Professional Summit on the topic of next generation management and leadership, where approximately 100 engineers and industry professionals attended the event. This was their program for the event, and Mill Creek highlighted as their director in providing the presentation. So already helping to make a name for Mill Creek. Hope you will all join me in welcoming her to our team. In your packet is, Joni has provided notes from a recent senior center focus group meeting. We have started, as you know, we had in the budget a goal of doing HOA focus groups. That is expanded to neighborhoods that have HOAs and don't have HOAs. And now we're doing targeted focus groups, this being seniors. So Joni met with the new executive director from the North Shore Senior Center, as well as Terry here on site, and we'll be expanding that to include Brookdale as well. So their notes are in your packet for your review. Also included is a summary of the trunk or treat. It was, for any of you that followed it on social media, I think just the video of the crowds showed how that event has grown. Rough estimates, we probably had 6,000 people attend that event. Another tremendous job by the communications and marketing team. Really, really a great event. The council planning schedule, an updated version, which it's kind of changing daily right now. A lot of things in motion, I believe, has been provided to each of you. And then the mayor pro tem had asked if we could provide a report and a briefing on the proposed CPPs, and we've included that in your packet. Mayor pro tem, I didn't know if you wanted to take a chance to discuss that tonight or if you would like just to provide it as an informational item, but we went ahead and provided the information.
I think it would be good if everyone could digest it and then at a meeting maybe in December, first part of December, because I think it would be good to have, Clay, thank you. Have Clay come in and talk about it.
Okay.
It's some background that I just glanced at the report you put together, and I think it generally summarizes what is proposed. I guess the only thing I would say tonight, just to make sure everyone's on the same page, of what this does and doesn't do. This doesn't expand the UGA. It just changes one of the policies that gives the county council another tool to consider changing the UGA. So it's a pretty small amendment. But so why don't everyone take a look at it, and then in early December, and before then, if you do have any questions, I'm happy to answer them and provide my background.
Yeah, thanks. So the I get it. I think there's some value in being able to swap between different UGAs. And so in some, I think the example that was given, like, do we really need capacity in Granite Falls, or do we need capacity in the Southwest UGA in terms of where people are going to want to live and where they're going to want to commute to work? But one of the reasons that we have the boundaries we have, like them or not, is because we're looking at concurrency of infrastructure to match with the growth. And so, yes, the county is going to put in a new road, 43rd, through that area that's going to help out. But are our schools prepared? Or is the sewer system prepared? Or is the power system prepared? You know, what are the other infrastructure things And I just worry that this is, yes, this doesn't directly affect this particular proposal that's in here. It more opens up the way for the county to have another thing to consider. But once the floodgate is open, will we run into problems? And I'm particularly worried about schools. In North Shore, just put in a new high school. It's going to be at capacity in the next year or two. I think maybe even next year once they get to four years. And it looks like this is going to be, it isn't our school district, but there's a lot of kids who are going to get added potentially if there's a lot of houses that go in. And so I know how hard it is to get funding for schools and things like that. So I just worry that this, while transportation, the county may be able to work on that some, other things like schools worry about. I'm also reminiscent of something Steve Thompson said at one of the meetings recently. Steve Thompson being the director of public works, something like that. Gina would know his title better, but one of the top guys at Snohomish County pointed out that the state Washington Department of Transportation has basically said they have no general plans to add capacity to state highways. And so while we may get more people traveling on 43rd or 35th, they're not planning on adding capacity to 527 or 96 or 524. There may be certain projects, certain places, but the WashDOT doesn't have funding and general plans to add to highways, and those state highways are an important part of getting people from arterials that go through neighborhoods like 35th or 43rd onto where they go to work. And so I'm also concerned, yeah, we can get people moving in and out of an area like this, but is it just going to bollocks it up for everybody else? So I think there's a lot of things for us to be concerned about here, and so I would relish an opportunity to at least talk about it and hear some more with the pros and cons.
Threw a lot out there.
I've been thinking about it.
No, those are all good points. I mean, I wish it was true that there was that much rhyme and reason that went into drawing the boundaries at the time. There really wasn't. I mean, if you go up out 156 to Sunset Road, and then if you stand there and look to the right, you're looking at urban growth, and if you look to the left, you're looking at rural area.
Yeah.
And so that's part, the whole structure of the CPPs doesn't give our county council, who's the ones that make the decision to draw the line, many tools to address when we have housing supply issues. And so the policies are so restrictive that they're having to rely upon these exceptions that are created in the CPPs, which is, this is one of them. So I could keep going on, and maybe we should do it another night. In terms of WashDOT, there is no concurrency requirement. You are correct. They don't have any plans to add capacity, but at the same time, that was part of the compact when GMA was adopted 25 years ago, is we knew traffic was going to get bad in the urban areas, but that's the decision the legislature made in its infinite wisdom, that we were going to have traffic get bad in the urban areas to protect the areas outside that. So, I could point to many examples in the urban growth boundary where it just doesn't make sense. You know, going back to Mr. Nelson's comment earlier, that boundary hasn't changed much in 25 years. The one exception was, and the city supported this at the time, was the proposal by a developer to add 45 acres, which is now being developed as Timber Creek Ridge. And you can go down and look at it. It's probably mostly sold out now. The company I was working for at the time was involved in the effort to expand the UGA out here, because you might recall at the time out by Gateway Middle School, they were proposing to put in New Forest View Elementary School. And so you had 156, that was going to be the main connecting point from 35th into the schools. So you have these rural property owners with urban level traffic coming through them. The same situation is happening down here on 43rd. So some of the points you raised, they're valid, but on the whole, I'm not sure that they're gonna have as big of impact on us as a city. But I'm looking too from the city's perspective at the bigger picture of the benefits of the county of giving some ability to have to better plan for growth, because right now they don't have all the tools that they need. So.
Okay.
And I just would like to note, we have some Boy Scouts here tonight that are earning some badges in government. So if they have any questions for the council members, if you'll make yourself available after the meeting, that would be great. And maybe we can even get a picture or two. So that would be awesome. That's all we have, Mayor.
The work program? Did you want?
I mentioned that earlier. There's an updated one.
Right, did you want to discuss anything on it?
No, it's just an updated copy. I don't think there's anything of note. We have moved the CPSM report. It's nearing finalization, and the presenter is available for December 5th, so it'll be presented at that meeting.
The only thing that I know, in one of the first couple meetings in January, don't we typically revisit the committee assignments?
Right.
I'm not sure I saw that on there.
Oh, thank you. We'll include that. Thank you.
Okay. Audience communication. Anybody want to talk to the council? Going once? You came down. You're welcome to talk to us. Okay. Going once, twice. Okay. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much to everybody for coming.
Maybe the...
That could have saved your life.